From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when Governor Andrew Cuomo announced the launch of a new Medicaid redesign, an opportunity, he explained, to make the Medicaid system better. New York State has long operated one of the broadest Medicaid programs in the country, described by the New York Times as a point of pride in a state with a long tradition of investing in the social safety net. But it has grown too expensive, according to some government leaders. The governor's office says Medicaid is a big part of why the state has a $6.1 billion budget hole. So here's what the governor wants to do. First, his new redesign team is working on ways to eliminate waste and abuse. They're holding hearings in different cities. Today, they're in Rochester, and the governor has discussed kicking more of the cost to counties. Any spending increase over 3% annually would have to be paid by the counties in some proposals. Recent data suggests that annual Medicaid increases are around 6%. That's millions of dollars that counties would have to cover under a new arrangement. And critics say that counties could respond by just by raising taxes, and Cuomo's plan would be forcing counties to do the work that the state should be doing. According to the Empire Center, New York's share of its $75 billion annual Medicaid bill is now $30 billion and growing, imposing an increasingly untenable burden on state and local budgets. The federal government pays the rest, and the redesign is meant to make things run more efficiently without hurting quality of life for those who rely on Medicaid. It's not a done deal yet. The New York Times editorial board is urging state leaders to find another way to cover costs without just dumping them onto local governments. Those who rely on Medicaid worry this could affect what is covered and what is not covered. So this hour, let's talk about what comes next with the goal of making the system better for everyone. Our guests include Wade Norwood, who's the CEO of Common Ground Health, who also serves on the Medicaid redesign team, too. Wade, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you very much, Evan.
Nice to have you, and nice to have Dr. Deborah Pierce, who is a clinical associate professor of family medicine at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Nice to have you back here. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Wade, let's start with just sort of diagnosing the issue. When people say, well, what's wrong with Medicaid? Is there a short answer that you give them? Is it working?
I think that was a great overview that you gave, Evan, by terms of introducing this, but very complex situation in which the state finds itself. I'd say quite simply that a decade ago, when the Medicaid redesign team was first formed, Medicaid was growing by over 10% year over year in this state. And I think that the governor did the right thing in terms of doing what we do as Common Ground Health. And I think what characterizes this community, he brought together a multi-stakeholder table and asked that group to really think and look at the Medicaid program and not just think of cuts, but think of what we could do in terms of investments that could bend the cost curve on Medicaid. And that effort worked tremendously well. From 2013 to 2018, we were able to keep the growth in Medicaid below 3% each year. And I think what we're dealing with this year, and the governor is approaching it in the right way, is to say that there are cost pressures that we're experiencing right now. Long-term care, the adoption of the minimum wage increase, and distressed hospital costs really point the opportunity for us to bring voices back together again and think about how is it that we can think about the Medicaid program and think about how we bring the cost pressures back into sustainability.
Listeners, as we talk about Medicaid, if you've got questions about obviously what is currently covered, but what might change or your thoughts about what's working or what's not, you can call the program. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Wade, when it comes to what the redesign team is doing, is this a foregone conclusion? In other words, have you drawn up plans? You're going to hold hearings, but you know what you're going to propose come April? Or is this a case where this is really not written in stone yet?
We've had one meeting to date, and I did not get the sense when I walked into that one meeting that there were pre-cut deals and decisions made. I think that this is an open conversation. The regional forums that we're holding, today's forum here in Rochester, I think are essential to us getting the voices of experts into our deliberations. And my hope and confidence, as the last time, is that we will wind up seeing this as not just a green eye shade conversation about money, but really about how do we improve and strengthen the delivery of care, particularly for those who are the most vulnerable in our communities.
Are too many services covered by Medicaid?
I don't think so. I don't think that this is a problem of we're doing too much. And I know that that's a tension between the state and the federal government. I really do believe that our question is, how do we make investments to address the social and economic determinants of health that will really wind up driving health improvement further, faster? And how do we think about the cost return on investment not being merely realized in the health domain, but realized in criminal justice, in education, and in human and social services?
Well, let me read from the New York Times editorial asking us to sort of slow down and make sure that the Medicaid changes are not just dumping costs to local counties. Here's what the New York Times editorial board writes. Quote, to get New York's Medicaid program back on track, the group will need to take a hard look at spending on non-medical services like cooking and bathing for homebound New Yorkers. According to the Empire Center, New York's Medicaid spending on such personal services was the highest in the country. That may be because of a program that has expanded in recent years in which Medicaid pays non-medical providers like family members to care for clients. In 2016, personal spending in New York accounted for 40% of national Medicaid spending for the category overall, up from 23% in 2011, the Empire Center said, end quote. Any of that look to you like, would you call it fat in a budget that could be cut?
Evan, this was my contribution at the first meeting of the MRT, is that we need to understand the difference between cost increases and investments. And I do not believe that we're going to build a sustainable Medicaid program that is focused on long-term care being provided in institutional settings. We're really going to need to create a system of caring for older adults in which I, as I age, will be able to remain in my home or in the least restrictive setting that's appropriate. That means we need to rely on family and on community. And I think that the caregiver, the care assistance program, is not an area of fat. I think it's an area in which we really are investing for long-term sustainability.
So before I turn to Dr. Pierce, who seemed to have a visceral reaction to what I read from the New York Times editorial board, before I do that, wait, I don't ask this sort of insincerely. I want to make sure I understand a little bit more about the point you're making. If you don't view this process as one in which the goal is to identify the cuts and to make the cuts necessarily, that there are ways to, I think you've been using the word invest in different ways, how are we going to get a cost reduction without making cuts?
I think what we need to do is think about the many different silos of the state budget, and we need to stop separating health and thinking that we're going to realize a cost savings only in that silo. We need to think about how investments in health can lead us to savings in other finance silos, and really think about the global spending, not just as the Medicaid program, but as the state budget itself.
Sure. So is there an example that stands out to you? Not saying that this is a concrete proposal, but is there an example of how that has worked in the past or could work here?
I think we have incredible evidence of how wise investments in healthcare have led us to savings in other domains. Early childhood is a perfect example. The more we invest in making sure that mom's underlying health is addressed preconception, the greater our opportunity is to avoid to have costs in terms of perinatal care.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense to me in terms of the overall cost structure, especially over many years. But if the goal is to reach a certain threshold of of change in year-to-year cost increase for Medicaid right now, it's hard to make an investment that's going to pay off down the line and still cut costs immediately, isn't it?
I think that the success of the Cuomo administration in terms of thinking about Medicaid has been the commitment to not looking at 1 or 2 year cycles, but really looking at spending over time. And I think we were incredibly successful in Medicaid redesign phase one. I think that we should absolutely think about the DSRIP experience as being a successful proof of Medicaid redesign phase two. And this is simply our requirement to meet the challenges of 2020.
Okay. Dr. Pierce, how do you view, at least from the starting point of asking whether Medicaid has a problem in New York State? I mean, certainly there's a money problem that the governor sees. Do you see any functional problem at the outset here?
No more than there is with the health system as a whole. And I think a lot of the costs, a lot of what makes Medicaid more expensive is that the health system as a whole is more expensive. And I think, as Wade alluded to, we need to talk about health and people's dignity as being an important part of health. You know, as far as paying for family members to help care for a disabled family member, if you look at it in terms of the economy as a whole, that's a big win. If you have somebody who's trying to coordinate the care of home caregivers for a disabled relative, do you want to pay that person to be able to do it, or do you want to pay somebody else to do it, and if that falls apart, they have to miss half a day of work or a day of work? So the big picture is, I think it's an economic boon.
I think in some ways, when you look at the debate about Medicaid across the country, given New York's, the New York Times used the term generous Medicaid program, expansive might be a word, whatever the case may be, what is on offer for Medicaid in this state is more than a number of other states do. When you travel to more conservative states, you often hear rhetoric like, well, New York, they give you everything on Medicaid. It's too much. And they're sort of flippant about it. And they say, you know, well, that's why you busted your budget. You're way too sort of loose with what you offer on Medicaid. How do you feel when you hear that kind of rhetoric, Dr. Pierce?
I think that what New York does is fairly reasonable. I think there are areas in which it could do better. People who have Medicaid in certain areas may have trouble getting to see certain specialists. They may have trouble finding a primary care doctor who will take Medicaid. So I don't feel like what we do is excessive. And what I hear about in some other states with a smaller Medicaid budget is that people suffer. Their health suffers, their dignity suffers.
But this isn't a case of the, when I worked in another state, I heard it referred to as a Cadillac Medicaid program.
I would call of it more of a Honda or Toyota or Subaru Medicaid program.
Whereas other states you think are more austere.
Yeah.
Okay. I certainly understand. Wade, does this state offer too much in Medicaid benefits?
I sit and respond to that question, Evan, as a parent of a special needs child that we were blessed to have with us until she passed away at age 10. It is difficult for me as I look at other states and see the incredible decisions that are penny wise, dollar foolish, and cruel. I do not and will never say that New York State is overly generous or inappropriate in terms of its Medicaid program. I think what we do is we actually have a Medicaid program that's aimed at meeting the human need that exists in our state, and that wisely understands that investing in human health is the most indispensable part of our economic development strategy. When we care for sick children, what we're doing is allowing their mom and dad to be able to go to work knowing that their children are all right. I don't believe that this is a question of our being overly generous. I think it's a question, just as every family has to do on a regular basis, of sitting down and looking at our budget and saying, where are there opportunities to economize and where is there need for investment? And you're right, I'm going to constantly use the word investment because I believe that our health budget in New York State is about investing in the people of New York.
So before I get some listener feedback, and again, listeners, as we talk Medicaid, if you want to join the conversation this hour, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program, connections@WXXI.org. Is it working for you? What has your experience been? What are your concerns regarding Medicaid as we look at changes at the state level? As Wade mentioned, about a decade ago, there was annual Medicaid cost growth around double-digit percentages, right? And so the first redesign team came in, and for a number of years, that annual growth changed. We're back seeing it at a higher level, and according to some estimates, at least 6% annual growth. One of the proposals, Wade, is to say, okay, anything more than 3% annual growth in your county pays for. Do you like that idea?
I think there's room for us to understand what is going on in terms of how county governments are administering the Medicaid program and determining eligibility. But I do not believe that our growth problem is really being fueled by what's happening at the county level. I think our sustainability problem in the Medicaid program has everything to do with the smart decision to move towards ensuring a $15 minimum wage. That's really what is causing, in my view, the instant explosion in costs. And I will listen to county governments. I will take in their considerations and be a voice for them in this debate as we try and figure out how we achieve sustainability. But what we've really got to be focused on, Evan, in my view, is understanding what are the barriers to health and health self-management among folks who live in households with low income. And what we see from our data at Common Ground Health is the fact that it just sucks to be poor. And the impact of being poor on people's health is real. And it is not just their physical health, but their mental and emotional health. And I think the opportunity for the Medicaid program, I think the opportunity for county governments is to really think about what is it that we could do better to support people's mental, emotional, and behavioral health.
Dr. Pierce, I know that particular 3% sort of cap, finance wasn't, sort of the main part of the conversation. But at the same time, I am curious to know if that's what happened to the state. If we just said anything over 3% of the county level, you deal with it. Does that work for you?
I mean, I think the national health care costs are going up faster than 3% a year. So I don't see why Medicaid should start being cut away or counties that are already struggling. I mean, in Monroe County, we're struggling to pay for early intervention services. So why do we want to cut out on health care?
Fair. And I also, one more point before we get to some listener feedback on this. I want to at least sort of put a premise out there and see if our guests agree. Medicaid is, something that was established, 1965? For people who are struggling with poverty or people struggling with disabilities, living with disabilities. That's what Medicaid is for. If you have a country with a growing wage gap and growing inequality, then you're probably going to have growing need for Medicaid. I don't really know how you can necessarily curb Medicaid costs if every year the number of people who are working poor, who are without jobs, who are sort of on the low end of a massive wage gap, if that exists, then aren't you going to have growing need for Medicaid? Is that wrong, Wade?
No, it's not wrong at all. And thank you before we turn to the phones,
yeah,
recognizing the fact that what we're really dealing with in New York State is emblematic of a national policy issue.
Inequality.
Amen. And the obligation that this country must fulfill of addressing the health needs of its people And I believe that FDR was wise when he created the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, because the fact that our commitment to health and our commitment to education funding as a nation will have everything to do with promoting the general welfare.
Okay. Dr. Pierce, do you see a need for essentially a healthcare overhaul?
Yes, in many ways. There are many ways in which the system is very inefficient. And then, you know, with Medicaid, is there's a wage gap. We need for people to have at least one place in the system where they're treated with respect and dignity. And they need to feel like they can get health care in a way that's mindful of the needs and the overwhelming stressors they already have.
Amen.
Well, let's turn to some of your feedback then. I'm going to start with Kirstie in Rochester first. Go ahead.
Hi. So I just happened to be listening to the program, and this is the first that I have heard about changes in Medicare. I happen to be on Social Security disability and Medicaid.
Yeah.
And normally I have to recertify for Medicaid every year come December. This year they did not send the recertification, and when I called and asked, they said that they wouldn't be sending recertification out until April. As I was listening to your program, they were saying that there are these major changes that are happening in April. And so I'm very concerned about what those changes are and how that's going to affect my receiving Medicaid.
Okay. Wade?
I really cannot assist the caller not knowing her county of residence and what the changes might be in terms of the process of recertification. But I would absolutely encourage leaning forward with regard to her county Department of Human Services or Social Services to try and make sure that she has a smooth recertification. Whatever changes happen as a result of MRT for the April 1 state budget are yet to be determined. And I will absolutely be very concerned about making sure that whatever changes are made are transparent to Medicaid recipients and their families so that they'll be able to understand what the state is doing.
Okay. Just for reference, I am Monroe County of New York.
Thank you, caller. So I would suggest reaching out to the Monroe County Department of Social Services, following up on that letter and understanding what those potential changes might be.
Okay. Like I said, I have not received any letter of any changes. The first that I heard about changes is listening to this program.
Oh, I apologize for my misunderstanding. So if what I would just say to you is today's forum in Rochester, as well as the first meeting of the MRT, have all been publicly posted on the website for the New York State Health Department, health.ny.gov. And I would just suggest monitoring and watching us closely.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Kirstie, thank you very much, and good luck to you. Wade, what do you think is the most sort of common question that people have right now? I mean, is it a question on what's covered, what gets recertified? I mean, is that what's top of mind?
I think what most of what I've been hearing has been the nature of the challenge. Why are we challenged with growth pressures in the Medicaid program? And then secondly, how do we think about the nature of those growth and cost pressures? I make a very big distinction between the fact that the Medicaid program has experienced cost increases in Medicaid transportation as opposed to the cost increases the Medicaid program has experienced in pharmaceutical costs. I see transportation as an investment. That's how we make sure people have access to care and that they're able to get to see great doctors like my colleague here, as opposed to the costs that are going to Big Pharma. And I think it's those types of distinctions and the cost pressures that we on the Medicaid redesign team need to be focused on.
Let me get Marion next on the phone. Go ahead, Marion.
You have to have a lot of money to go to a nursing home here in Rochester. And I mean a lot. And I thought I was being very smart about choosing a place. But, oh gosh, I can hear myself.
Yeah, you got to turn the radio down in the background there, Marion, if you could.
I will.
But that, go ahead.
And then I became blind. Well, first I wanted you to know, once you're elderly, and I am 97, I am. Darn, I can't get it. There. The price is huge. I mean, it's like $1,600 a month or so, more than that. And then after I became blind, she said, I'm sorry, you'll have to pay another $3,000 a month. $3,000. Why? Because you need extra help. Guess what? I'm not getting extra help. There's barely enough help. The girls don't show up. No. And this outfit who owns this, they have like 10 places in Rochester. It isn't. So what I'm trying to say is watch your money.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Marion, thanks for the phone call. And explain, by the way, that she is not on Medicaid, but just worried about money. So, again, not a Medicaid call per se, but anything you want to add there, Wade Norwood?
Long-term care spending is really one of the areas of concern for the MRT. And those costs reflect personal care. And the enrollment growth is faster than any of the demographic trends would suggest. And as I had said earlier, I think we're going to need to really think about how it is that we redesign and rethink what care for older adults means here in New York State. Common Ground Health will be reconvening a commission to have local partners sitting and looking at what's going on with long-term care here in the Finger Lakes. That work will be longer than the MRT stated aim, but my hope is, just as with MRT1, that the conversation that we're having about Medicaid redesign will not be truncated by the budget process, but will really persist and allow for the voices of this state to really come to the table to think about what we really need to do this right.
Let me read, Dr. Pierce. This comes from a listener who I hope will call, but, you know, you and your colleagues are so busy in the medical field, it's hard to get any of you to come. I'm amazed we got you to come in studio today. So, but here's the comment from a listener named Jane, who just says, who considers herself a very progressive person, but says Medicaid is going to be a huge and toxic issue. It's hard to convince the general public that they should support this essential safety net program when the beneficiaries seem to be getting better, cheaper services than the working poor who struggle with employer-provided plans with high co-pays and high deductibles. Do you agree with that?
What I agree with is that there are a lot of health insurance plans for the working poor that are really inadequate. People shouldn't have to worry about a high deductible. They shouldn't have to worry about affording the co-pays. They shouldn't be unable to get care. So I guess my feeling on it is that the issue isn't that Medicaid is too much. It's that employers are offering things that aren't enough and that people are unfortunately forced to make the decision.
I think that's Jane's point. I think what she's saying is, given how weak healthcare is when it comes to the private sector, when people are you know, getting various plans and that are so many high deductible plans out there. I mean, when so many people on even private insurance, what, 40 to 45% of the people in this country on private insurance have high deductibles. I mean, if your deductible is $6,000, you've got catastrophic coverage.
Right.
You don't really have healthcare coverage beyond that. And I think that's Jane's point. When that circumstance is there, and then people look at what Medicaid provides, there can be a tension, which speaks more about the larger system. I think, at least I'm reading Jane's email to say, the system itself is broken. So good luck reforming Medicaid when people are suspicious of Medicaid, given the fact that their own insurance doesn't do very much for them.
Simplicity is economy. And so if instead of having high deductible plans where there's a lot of negotiation around what tests we can get, what costs are covered, getting prior authorization for things, which generates huge costs for the healthcare system, set up a basic standard of rules that Medicaid will cover, and that will probably save the system a lot of money in the long run.
Okay.
But, Wade? Evan, I think that the caller's question goes back to our earlier colloquy on what New York State is experiencing in trying to find sustainability for the Medicaid program is really endemic of a national issue. And it is the fact that right now we do not view health care as the right of Americans. We are not investing in ensuring access to not only health services, but to the health supporting services that people need. And I think that the caller's concern of living in a world where there is a tension between the poor and the working poor sets us up for a false dichotomy and a Hobson's choice we can't afford to make. It is very important that we really think about what are the things that we need to make sure that all of our neighbors have access to in order to live healthy and to manage their health. My wife and I, because our children are now adults, moved to a high deductible plan. And I remember last January showing up at pharmacy to pick up the insulin that I need as a diagnosed diabetic. And the bill was over $4,000. If we're really going to ask people to make the choice between eating, paying their rent, and having their meds, we're on a path that's going to lead to disaster. And these costs that the governor's struggling with are going to continue to increase.
I understand that point. I mean, I have this neat condition called eosinophilic esophagitis, and I got a piece of beef stuck in my throat, which is not recommended. I could breathe, but not fun, everybody. Look, we're airing out all of our health dirty laundry here. So I end up needing a scope. I mean, they called in at 3 a.m. I got it scoped out. The bill was $8,300. Next time I get a piece of bread stuck in my throat because of this condition, if I haven't met the deductible, I don't know. Maybe I'll work it out at home. Maybe I'll go to sleep sitting upright and hope it passes overnight. Does that sound safe? That's the healthcare system we have. But you're making a point that a lot of people have made. The problem is you're on the governor's team now to fix this. And if the governor says, sorry, man, go fix this. Mr. Norwood, your job is to find enough efficiencies. What are you going to tell the governor?
My answer is going to be that if we spend and invest in the health domain, what we save in criminal justice, what we save in unemployment, what we save in human services will more than offset the investment. And that what we need to do is be very clear on where is the health spend a wise investment and where is the health spend a waste. And again, this pressure we're feeling is because of the fact that New York State adopted a $15 minimum wage. I think that was the right thing for us to do, because we absolutely know that fundamentally the greatest indicator of improved health status is household income. And so what we have to do as a state is we're going to have to adjust our revenue raising in order to meet the demands of what we know is sound policy. And I served 16 years at city council, and I always found the answer to public budgeting is, yes, achieving economy, but also recognizing that taxes are the price that we pay for living in a civil society. and the state government is going to have to recognize we're not going to achieve our aims just by cost savings alone. We're going to need to recognize the revenue side of the picture.
Dr. Pierce, anything you want to add there?
I agree with what you said. You know, going back to the example of $4,000 a month on insulin, does the state want to invest money in treating diabetics properly, or does they want to say, well, good luck, you'll have to figure it out yourself? And then 10 years from now, heaven forbid, somebody has complications from untreated diabetes. Now they're disabled. Now they're on Medicare. Now they're on Medicaid, but they're unable to work. So we lose their economic productivity. And we're also not treating them with dignity and respect.
Listeners, we've got more of your questions to work in, and we are late for our only break of the hour. As we talk about New York State's efforts to reform Medicaid in a way that might bring annual cost increases more into line of what the governor's office might deem to be more, I guess, affordable or sustainable. So the governor has created a new Medicaid redesign team, and the redesign team, too, has been hosting events. They're going to do it in different places around the state. They're in Rochester today, but they want to listen. They want to take a lot of different feedback, and then they're going to kind of go back to the governor and talk about what has to happen to achieve some of these goals here. So part of that team is Wade Norwood, who's the CEO of Common Ground Health, who's with us in studio. And Dr. Deborah Pierce is here, who's a clinical associate professor of family medicine at the University of Rochester Medical Center. And we'll get right back to your feedback on Medicaid next. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, Michael Bloomberg is gaining in the polls on the Democratic presidential race, but now he's defending some of his recent remarks about farmers. He says farming is one of the easiest jobs, doesn't need a lot of brain power, and the problem is that the economy has shifted into more information technology. But farmers say they'd like a chance to respond on this, and we're going to give them that opportunity Wednesday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's work through more of your feedback. And here's a question off air. A woman who did not want to give her name says that at a particular income, there's a cutoff for getting benefits for Medicaid. But if you're just slightly above the amount, you get nothing. And she carefully organizes her income to receive benefits. And she thinks there should be some kind of a process of sort of prorating your income if it's above the cutoff to make it so that you're not just trying to organize your income in a way that gets you under a certain point. Wade Norwood, what do you make of that?
I think that the caller's comment is not only on point, but it is also reflective of what's been a vibrant conversation taking place at the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative, or MAPI, with the term is the fiscal cliff, that we have a set of public benefits that really wind up disincenting people to gain income because of the way in which benefits are lost. And so this is one of those issues that is under deep conversation, subject of deep conversation here in the community, and is a conversation that's being advanced to Albany.
Okay, Dr. Pierce?
Absolutely. People should be able to work what they want to work without worrying about suddenly having to pay $4,000 a month for their medication.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
Okay.
We need their skills in the workplace.
So the county executive of Monroe County, Adam Bello, making remarks, reading in various sites today, that he opposes the governor's proposal to shift some of the cost of Medicaid back to counties. Again, one of the ideas is if there's anything above a 3% annual increase in the cost of Medicaid, anything beyond that 3% would have to be absorbed by the county. The county executive, from what I'm reading, is saying that's going to be $13 million a year in Monroe County. You know, you're going to bust some serious county budgets or require something, massive cutting, tax increases, et cetera, which, by the way, is some of the complaints that I've heard in private conversations with people who work in insurance and in the medical field, who say that particular plan doesn't do anything but shift the burden right back to local government. And what are they supposed to do? Well, they either raise taxes or they will cut costs. Now, Wade Norwood, as you said, you think taxes are a part of living in sort of an effective civil society. So is it your view that, well, if we do this, okay, then they might raise taxes locally to cover that cost, but it's worth it. They should do that. Is that your view?
I my view is the law of unintended consequences, Evan, that what we really did with the Medicaid program as a major shift in the last decade has been the state takeover of Medicaid costs, and that takeover has really, in the governor's view, created a disincentive for local governments to control the growth of the Medicaid program because they're shielded financially from that impact. I think our job on the MRT is to delve into that question and understand, is that a correct surmise? If it is an unintended consequence, what do we do about it? And how do we make sure that we have local government, as the earlier caller really understood, it's the county that really is her interface with the Medicaid system. How do we make sure that local government has the tools and the resources that they need to soundly administer the program?
Okay. Jordan writes to say, with regard to the comment about Big Pharma, could your guest speak to pharmacy benefit managers, PBMs? As a pharmacist, when Medicaid outsourced this to PBMs years ago, drug costs have only increased while reimbursement to pharmacies has declined, including closing of multiple pharmacies, some in areas of need. PBMs act like middlemen to only increase costs, whereas if Medicaid managed this directly, they would be able to negotiate drugs and rebates without them, thereby reducing cost. I don't know much about that. Dr. Pierce, are you familiar with that?
I'm not sure about PBMs per se, but I know that there are a lot of times where I'm asked to get a prior approval for an inexpensive medication, which generates more cost to the system as a whole and delays care for the patient.
The caller is absolutely correct. This could be a show in and of itself, the role of pharmacy benefit managers as middlemen. And all we need to do as individuals is walk into pharmacy. And if we have insurance, don't disclose it and say, I'd like to pay out of pocket. And there is a dramatic difference in the out-of-pocket cost versus the charge that's assigned to our insurance policies, all because of the role of the PBMs. I think this is a very important issue for policy to address. And I apologize to the listeners who have to hear my terrible raspy voice.
Oh, you're hanging in there, Wade. 10 more minutes, sir. But I'll take your point, though, Wade. We will learn more about PBMs and follow up separately because, I mean, that's something that I think I'd like to learn more about. Pat in Parenton on the phone next. Go ahead, Pat.
Hi. My comment is that when my mom needed taking care of, she needed more and more taking care of, we spent every bit of the money from the family farm to take care of her until she was down to $13,000, and then we were forced to go on Medicaid, something we didn't want to do. It disturbs me when I look around and see how people protect, like, the family house or whatever, and that the taxpayers are picking up the cost of taking care of the person. You know, I didn't begrudge the money. That was something that my parents worked for to take care of themselves in later years, and that's how we spent it. And I'm bothered that I have to take care of other people's families because they shelter property and income and all those things and go on Medicaid.
Pat, thanks for the phone call. What do you think, Wade?
One of the data points that I am very interested in having common ground surface is how many folks 50 to 70 are living in our community with only one relative or no significant other. I think that the caller's question causes me to wonder whether or not people actually have family members that can support them as they age. I think we tend to underestimate how mobile a society we've become. And I think that there's a large number of older adults who are living alone or living with just one other support, that if that support passes, they would be alone. I don't think that our pressure in the Medicaid program is really being fueled by people who don't want to shoulder their responsibility. I think it's being fueled by people who can't shoulder their responsibility. The depth of poverty in the Finger Lakes region is wide. It is pervasive. It is not limited to the city of Rochester, and it does not have an African-American face. It's a face that looks like all of us, and it is felt across the entirety of this region. And I think that the challenge for New York State is to really understand that the needs of its communities are great.
Listening from Canada on a mobile app, here's Dave, who says, I am so sad that so many struggle so badly and costs are so high, mostly for private profit. I moved to Canada in late 1995 and was very surprised to learn that the deductions from my paycheck at Queen's University were quite a lot lower than they were at Cornell, which I left to take the job at Queen's. Taxes were higher, but nowhere near higher enough to match what I paid in premiums in New York State, and now there were no deductibles or copays. And now there was no network to worry about either. I agree to the extreme with your guest who argues that public funding of healthcare is an extremely good investment for the good of society. All the best from Canada. That's from Dave. Dr. Pierce, what do you think?
Complete agreement. Simplicity is economy. If you have one system, one set of rules, you're cutting out all of the overhead and bureaucracy that's put into place to try to save money.
Okay, but Dr. Pierce, simplicity is economy. I take that point. But simplicity isn't always so easy in sort of public perception. Let me give you an example. So Dave says he goes from Cornell to Queens, finds out he's paying more in taxes but less overall because now he doesn't have to worry about copays, premiums. He's not worried about all the things he used to stress about, and overall costs are lower, even though his tax bill is higher. We're having a presidential campaign in which, in the middle of the fall, Elizabeth Warren spent two debates in a row being pressed by panelists. Well, are you going to raise taxes? And she said, well, overall costs are going to be down, exactly what Dave's talking about in Canada. And they'd say, yeah, but taxes are going to be higher, right? And she'd say, your costs are going to be down. Yeah, but you're going to raise taxes? It's like the word taxes is the only thing that people think about, as opposed to understanding the full load of what we have to pay for various services and needs. So it's not as simple in this particular case, or maybe we oversimplify directly to taxes. Now, I don't know if Elizabeth Warren is correct that under her plan, something similar would happen to what Dave describes, which is even if taxes are higher, and now, by the way, she's saying taxes wouldn't be higher. But even if they were, I don't know if she's correct, but I understand the point she's making, that if you pay $5 in taxes and $5 in healthcare costs, and now you're going to pay $7 in taxes but $1 in healthcare costs, you're paying $8 total instead of $10, but you're paying higher taxes and lower healthcare costs. Well, it should be a better deal for you, and Dave says in Canada it is. But here in this country, we get obsessed with taxes. So what are we going to do about that?
It's a challenge because I understand people saying, well, I have flexibility in my health care, so I can save money by going for a high deductible, low cost health plan, which in a lot of ways is a gamble because you might get stuck with suddenly a $5,000 or $8,000 bill.
Yeah. Wade, what do you make of Dave's email from Canada saying he pays a little more in taxes, lower overall, and he's wondering why he listens to this. He says this sounds sad to him listening.
I think that Dave is a very helpful voice in terms of keeping us all involved in a conversation of understanding that health is not the equivalent of medicine. Dr. Pierce and her colleagues are an important part of health, but health is also our well-being. It is our parks. It is our playgrounds. It is our mental health and leisure. It is how we recreate ourselves. And I think what we need to do, and I'm hopeful MRT2 will be a vehicle for our thinking more broadly about health, our thinking more broadly about how we invest in human capital, and how we understand the value that we get from investments in health are not just about pharmacy and not just about labs and exams, but really about how we live and our common weal.
Last 30 seconds. What's the timeline now? What's the team going to do next?
The idea is to get to the governor. We've got a next meeting first week of March and getting recommendations to the governor's office by the end of the month of March.
I mean, it's a lot that's got to happen in a short amount of time.
A lot that has to happen in a short amount of time.
How many people are on the team?
I think about 24, 25.
Okay.
But don't hold me to that, Evan.
That's all right.
You quizzed me, and I'm unprepared for that.
That's okay. Wade Norwood's the CEO of Common Ground Health, who serves on, he calls it MRT2, the Medicaid Redesign Team 2. Appreciate your time and your perspective and hanging in there when you're a little under the weather. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much, Evan.
And Dr. Deborah Pierce, a clinical associate professor of family medicine at the University of Rochester Medical Center, generous with her time as always, and one of our favorite Twitter follows, by the way. Poor Deborah, we always rope you into these conversations, but I'll tell you what, we greatly appreciate the medical perspective in the community. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Listeners, a lot more to share on this, so not a done deal, as Wade says, and a lot more to learn, and we'll continue to follow it with WXXI News and our great colleagues like Brett Dahlberg's reporting on this ongoing as we continue to follow what happens next with Medicaid. Our thanks to the whole team today, David Griffin volunteering, the great Rob Braden engineering, and really, Megan Mack, who can't even get a day off, producing all the time, always working. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.